I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Friday Special, a podcast by Guitar Nerds. Now for 2020, the Friday Special series is running every week, and each week I'll have a new guest from the world of guitars, amplification, effects, pedals. We're going to have brands and producers and musicians. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined by our special guest, luthier and founder of SMP Guitars, Stuart Powick. Hello, Stuart, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yes. Wonderful. Thank you very much for coming on.
That's a pleasure.
So for listeners, if you're not familiar with SMP Guitars and all the wonderful things that they're doing, SMP are a custom shop who make wonderfully, meticulously designed and gorgeously presented modern guitars in a number of different standard body shapes. And you're right out of Surrey here in the UK as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, sort of in the Surrey Hills. Which is a nice place to be located.
Yeah, a lovely little bit of the country to be in.
Yeah.
And how long has SMP been making custom shop guitars? Because I will admit to have only maybe in the last year become aware of SMP guitars.
Oh no, not a problem at all. That's I think most people have only just sort of become aware of SMP guitars. So you're in a good solid group. I've been going around about 6 years.
Right.
Just pushing on 6 years. Before that, I was, tinkering and modding and kit building. But when I actually put a name on it and, you know, sort of said, right, let's do this, was around about then, yeah.
I see. And we were talking about this about 2 minutes ago, but it's such a great story that I kind of want to hear it again, because I would normally ask about how people got into becoming like a high-end custom shop, you know, guitar builder, because it's such a specific part of the community. So there's always an interesting story with everyone I talk to, but I thought yours was especially interesting, kind of stemming from your sort of the job that you had before this in running bars.
Yeah, exactly that. So I have been in the bar game since I was 18, and I sort of worked my way up from a guy that would stand on the door greeting people, became a bartender, then became a manager, and then basically made a punt on getting my own bar. That was in 2006. It was in Camden Town, and it was awful. It had no lead on the roof. Someone had nicked all the lead, which was unbelievable considering how high it was. And it used to rain in from the top, from the roof, and it would go through the top floor. There was a basement, two floors of bar, and then at a flat, a masonette, so a two-floor masonette. And it would rain through the roof, I beg your pardon, into the top floor, through the top floor into the first floor of the flat. And then there was, where the kitchen should have been, there was just a massive gaping void, and you could see all the steels and it used just to pour through. And I got in a bit of debt, and I was like, this is going to be great, because when you're like, you know, you're that young and you're just keen, you're like, yeah, I'm going to do it. You just go for it. And it took about 3-4 months to build, and with my dad and my granddad, and my granddad was building sash windows and at home, and my nan was making packed lunches, and I was working night shifts, and the money I'd earn with the night shifts, I'd pay for tradesmen to do things that we couldn't do ourselves. So it was a good process, but I had this manager named Richie. He was like one of my best buds, and he had worked for me for 5 years, which in the hospitality, that's, you know, that's considered a good stint, a good time to stay, you know, with one company. Absolutely amazing guy, and he was a big player, and I was like, wow, I would love to, you know, give him a 5-year gift that actually meant something, you know, not just I bought it, or, you know, something that I made, or something really cool. And I had that time had just got a PPI payout, which was, you know, from being a teenager and just splashing cash on a credit card.
When I think, know all about that.
Yeah, when you don't realise what life's about, and this is debt and it's going to come back and bite you. And so I got this payout, and I was literally obviously going to do exactly the same thing as I did as a teenager and absolutely throw it all up the wall, until my wife got me by the back of the neck and was like, don't do that. You know, why don't you invest in your future? Because I was coming to the point where hospitality had been in it for so long that I was done with it, basically. And before this point, I had been like a modder and a kitter, and I'd, you know, buy kits and put them together for myself. And I did a 10-day course with Mark Bailey up in Scotland. And I made this guitar. And at the time, everyone was like, oh, where are you going? Because I was working full-time with them as well. Where are you going? I was like, oh, I'm doing a pension course. And they're like, in Scotland? I was like, yeah. They're like, oh, we Googled it. And you can do one in Croydon. I didn't like the look of the one in Croydon, to be honest. So, and every day they were like, oh, how was it? I was like, oh, so boring. Fluorescent lights, you know, those polystyrene ceiling boards. So boring. You know, I can't believe I have to learn all this stuff. But I did this course. And then when I got back, I spent the remainder of the PPI money on basically kitting out some basic tools. And I built essentially the first kind of Orpheus.
For Richard, now, the Orpheus is your
super
strat. That's your super strat.
And I sort of designed that, and I built that, and I put it on Instagram once I built it. I kind of did some, like, you know, me building it pictures, and I put it on Instagram, and everyone was like, some people started saying, oh, this is great, and people that knew Richie's, this is great, can I have one? And I kind of really freaked out, and I was like, I'm a bit of a one-trick pony, you know, I've done this 10-day course. You know, I've learned what I learned. And when I did the course, I went to Mark. He's like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to do the hardest thing ever, so that when I come away from this, if I do something else, I can fall back, is the wrong word, because I think, you know, now in hindsight, you realize how much you have to learn. But I did a neck through 5-piece laminate with stainless steel frets for my first guitar.
As your first guitar?
Yeah. So I have to put a picture up of it on Instagram so you can see it.
But is it from the Orpheus of today?
The body shape is there. The headstock was awful.
Right. So before the SMP headstock, which is fantastic.
I spent so much time on that.
Oh, it's something I kind of like to ask custom builders, because it must be, the headstock's the thing, isn't it? People can hate you because of your headstock.
And you've
got to create something with an identity.
Yeah, exactly. And when, obviously before you're a builder, most people are a player and a purchaser. And I remember at the time I was in a band, I was really into 7-strings, and he was like, oh, nice, nice. Oh, look at the headstock. Nice. Oh, look at the headstock. And that would be the thing that I'd always, oh, look at the headstock. You know, it would really grind me, you know, grind my gears, you know, like lovely looking guitars. And look at the headstock. So that was like a real focus for me, to like get that headstock kind of nailed. Because, you know, every major brand you think of, like the real big ones, you recognize by the silhouette of the headstock.
Yeah.
You know, there's some brilliant builders out there that are world class and will crush everyone, but there's quite a few of them you won't recognize from a silhouette of the headstock. And there can be some huge, huge, huge global brands, and you'll recognize from the silhouette of the headstock. So I really kind of focused on that. I kind of had that business kind of mindset, you know. Well, I don't know if I've achieved it by any stretch. I'm not saying I have, but that was kind of my goal.
It looks like the sort of headstock that's taken time to think about, because it's quite an original shape. It's still kind of sensible in that it's, you know, functional.
I started with straight string pull, so that if I had a trem or a hardtail, you know, I didn't have to tweak anything. So that was like the first thing. It's like, right, straight string pull, and then go from there. But, you know, a lot of things I picked up, because after I did after I did this guitar and people were like, oh, this is interesting, I realised I was a bit of a one-trick pony. I went to Luthier College for 2 years and I learned from the amazing Mike Hobbs, who is just brilliant. You know, he's part of the, you know, the European Builders Guild, and he's just absolutely brilliant, just a wonderful man, just a great teacher. And I kind of, you know, from learning that course with Mark Bailey, going to Luther College for a couple of years, kind of combined that, and then just learning online and as much stuff, you know, compiling these three sources of information, reading, kind of got a basic, you know, education. But you only really learn by doing a lot of the time. You know, you learn from your mistakes, I think, a lot of the time.
I guess so.
Guitar building at the beginning, definitely.
And on that, like with the Orpheus, because of course you certainly, I think your builds are, if you learn from your mistakes, then, you know, you must have made a load early on, because your builds are very, very high quality now.
You're only as good as your last song, whatever they say, aren't they? You know, if you,
right, yeah,
you know, and there's two buddies that, like Richie's one, the first one I made, I got it back because I was like, I can make this better. Can I have it back, please? I've had it for too long because I've got so behind and need to finish it and send it to him. But he's like, just make a living and get it to me. But it's like one of those. And there's another buddy that he was like one of the third people, and I got it back, and I'd like, I need to get that back to him because it was just tweaking it. Because, you know, I'm aware of the guitar, the really early guitars, because when I was really early, the guys, like, they, you know, they were like, oh, can I make this for them? And I was very honest. I was like, well, this is what I've done. This is my education. I'll do it for you, but I'll do it for the cost of the wood and, you know, six beers or something, you know, the cost of some beers.
Right.
And so they knew what they were getting into. But I'm always worried, like, well, those early ones was a learning process, you know, some of the course, really, yeah, really early ones. So it's a case of getting them back and refining them, or striking a deal, sending them another one and going, if you ever sell that first one, I will buy it. And that's the end of it. Because with the internet and the world, you know, people don't know the backstory. People don't know everything that you've done. And so easily someone could find that and be like, well, look at this. This is, do you know what I mean? But that was like, you were literally green and fresh at the start when you were learning, you know, and these are the people that allowed you to learn.
How flamboyant were the wood choices on that first Orpheus in comparison to now? Because I imagine you've refined your wood sourcing
Well,
you obviously have sort of, you have an excellent selection of wood. So you
The first one I made was a Wenge and Babinga 5-ply neck with a Honduran mahogany body and a flame maple cap.
You went straight board. In.
yeah. I was like, I want to make it hard so I could learn. You know, if it's hard, then hopefully I would have done some hard things in my mind, which is completely, in hindsight, wrong. And then, you know, I would hopefully be easier going forward, which is completely incorrect. But, you know, you didn't know, you're green. But the first one I made for Richie, again, I think that was a mahogany, Honduran mahogany body. It was an unbelievable 5A flame maple cap. And then I had I think I had a Wenge layer in between it. Or like a pinstripe. So I bought a cap because I didn't really know about veneers. I wanted like a black detail between the body and the cap. I think it was either Wenge or it was ebony. And I bought this cap and then I just sanded it down until it was a couple of mil thick, rather than just buying a veneer. Very expensive way of doing it. And then I think I did a 5-ply Wenge and Babinga neck, but that was set neck rather than a neck through.
So
always like that, but then it's because you come from a player, and you know, you come from the viewpoint of a player and a purchaser. You've been, the majority of your life you've been playing since you were a kid, so you know what looks nice, you know what you want, you know what you aspire to. So I think that's kind of been where I've always thought, you know, rather than knocking it out of the first ones out of floorboards, because no one's going to want it out of floorboards.
Well, if you know, certainly your range starts at a very, the range of woods, certainly in kind of the sale examples that you have, are always incredible. Like, you know, the Orpheus and the
Petrichor. That's the smell of the earth after the first rainfall.
Right. See, I wanted to talk about names as well, because they are great. So you have the Orpheus, The Icor.
Icor.
Yeah. I'm great with names. And then, of course, I'm going to call it the Tuesday.
Yeah, that's just Tuesday in Greek. It's Triti.
Right.
That's how it's pronounced, Triti. I'm sure someone, a Greek national is going to absolutely rip me, but from pressing the little speaker button on Google Translate and the lady goes, Triti, that's how I believe it is pronounced.
Right, I see.
But yeah, I kind of got myself in a Greek kind of thing, naming, uh-huh. The Orpheus, the legend of the Orpheus. He went down to the gates of hell and played the two-headed dog, you know, to sleep, to go and get his, you know, love of his life, and he could escape the underworld. But the one deal was that, you know, he couldn't look back to make sure she was following him, and he did look back, and she went back into the gates of hell. But he was such a badass shredder, you know, he made Servius, the dog of gates, I think it's Servius, isn't it? He made him fall asleep. So I was like, that's a good, so you're having a super strat. And obviously it's very generic. You're kind of, in my mind, I was like, well, super strat, the kind of player that plays super strat, you know, blah, blah, blah. Which again is wrong, but everyone can play a super strat. But, you know, that was kind of where I was going. And so I was like, you know, that's going to be the Orpheus. And then the Icor I brought out next. And in my head, I was like, oh, it's going to be a real kind of riff machine, you okay. know,
and that and one's like a jazz master offset,
yeah,
sort of
that's
shape.
It, yeah. And Icor means, if I get this right, it's like the fluid that runs through the veins of gods, like blood or something like that. I said it completely wrong, but it's kind of really emotive. It's that feeling I kind of get when you hear solos are great, yeah, sure, but when you hear that riff, the riff that connects you, that just like runs through, and you hear that riff, and you're like, oh gosh, that feeling you get of that riff that just, you know, changes everything. And that's kind of what that name kind of summarizes.
And was that, and that was your second guitar, was it? So after the Orpheus?
That was the second model, yeah. That was the second model.
It's quite different going from a very sort of modern, like, it's a super strat, but it's quite a new shaped super strat. Like, it's very much your own take on a super strat. You've included lots of modern things, like that. What's now becoming more popular is the sort of upside down jack angle.
Yeah.
And things like that. That's very much, whilst it's a super strat, a completely your own thing. Whereas this is the Icor is maybe leaning a little bit more on traditional stuff.
Definitely.
Well, that, and was that deliberate? Did you want to have kind of both things covered?
Yeah, I think I've had this conversation, and I've been critiqued, and you know because at the moment, you know, there's four or so models, and they're all vastly different. And people are like, well, how can you do them all so different? And it's like, well, the shape of the body is not actually what makes a great guitar. Obviously, if you do it right, it's obviously going to be great. But the way the neck is and how everything plays and feels, you know, you can change the shape of your body. And as long as you sort of, you know, adhere to the same, you know, similar concepts and philosophies, that it fits on you, and it's not neck heavy, and you're concentrating all those things, you know, you have the freedom to do that. And obviously I wanted to get a different style of player. I wanted to not just be sort of niche, oh, I'm only making super strats and therefore I'm only attracting X player. Uh-huh. I wanted to be able to, you know, there's so many different styles of music that I enjoy, and so many different types of player. And that's always been the goal, to very much have a guitar for everyone.
Right.
And that, yeah, that's kind of why I went there.
I see. And I guess in that sense, if you think of the Orpheus is quite modern, the Icor is quite traditional. The next two sort of in order, you went very modern and then, you know, fairly traditional as well.
The Triti, yeah.
Well, you know, first of all, let's talk about your headless model, because that's...
Oh, yeah, that went at him next, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. That's super modern, isn't it? And, you know, I don't really know why that one came about. I love it. And I'm currently making three of them for customers.
I can imagine that's really popular at the moment, that model.
Yeah, and it's great. And again, it's a different thing. You know, as a builder, you're kind of, you're exploring different things. You become interested in, you know, when you read up about them, and when people sort of say, oh, the benefits are and all this, and you want to know yourself. You want to actually, you know, carve the wood and feel it and go, oh yeah, you know, definitely that is a thing, you know, it's interesting. And so you allow yourself to explore that kind of side of things. But that was a really hard one to design, because, you know, you kind of get pushed in a certain way with the headless model,
right?
Because you've got to think about the bridge and the fact that you tune and, you know, you string up there, and you need the access of the hand, and, you know, it kind of sort of forces you either to remove wood there or do something creative. And, you know, a lot of headless guitars just end, you know, at the end. There's no kind of anything kind of headstocky kind of element. Obviously it's a headless, when I say headstock, you know what I mean, yeah. Like something there. And so they're the two things.
I thought that was a really nice... Sorry, yeah, that was a really nice touch. The fact that you've added, like, just a, you know, not a headstock, but a little sort of nod to headstocks. Well, and you've made it shapely, and you've managed to get your logo on there.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because a lot of headless guitars, the branding, your logo is in the same place. It's on the body, above the 22nd or 24th fret, you know, that kind of the joint there. And I wanted to definitely not do that, because that's what the majority of them look like. So I was like, well, I don't want to do that. So that was the kind of the first sort of thought process. And then I really like the feeling of hitting of a loop. Like, I know I'm at that end. You know, I want to feel, I don't want my hand just to run off it.
Right.
So that's why I did that kind of sort of miniature little chode of a headstock. I don't really know what we should call it, but yeah.
That's
but
fine.
We are going to go with that. So yeah, so that's why I kind of did that, because it just kind of finishes it. And it was different, you know, it was a point of difference, you know, to a lot of headlesses out there.
Was that the first guitar that you offered in like fan fret options, or was that always available on the Orpheus as well? Because of course you do extended range across the board.
Yeah, right. I've got quite a few in production, but up until this point, you know, that people, I think it's kind of like people want to see one before. So if you're building six strings, people order six strings. They look good, but there seems to be a mental block to go to the sevens. So I've got literally a flurry of sevens coming out now, and then there's seven multi-scale coming out as well. And I think once people sort of see those guitars in that kind of, you know, the seven, I think then that will be another kind of, there'll be an upkick of orders of those. I might be completely wrong. I tend to be completely wrong, but, you know, my mind tells me that will kind of happen. There seems to be, you know, if you're just making those sixes, you kind of get those, they're the orders you kind of get, they're the players you're attracting, because I think people, it's very visual, you know, you kind of see it and that's your kind of guitar and you're that kind of player and you want it, you know. So you have to have a lot of examples for people to kind of sort of,
yeah, that makes sense. I guess so. Yeah. When people are choosing something that essentially they're ordering with a, you know, with a form rather than, you know, off the shelf, I guess people want to have had as close a reference to it as possible to, you know, make sure they're making the right choice on something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's completely fair enough. You know, you're asking people for a lot of money, and you know, that needs to be understood and respected. You know, they don't know you from Adam. You're just a fella on Instagram.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, you say a lot of money, but considering kind of the tops and the finishes and the type of guitars you do, you're nowhere near sort of the top end of custom shop prices.
No, that was deliberate at the beginning. So when I started, I was obviously, my main living was coming from the bars, from running bars. And obviously I was very conscious to get a name and to get some form of reputation. And to do that, I needed to have guitars out there and build guitars. So I started off with a 30% discount. And then the next year I did a 20% discount. And that was always, you know, just to attract people. And along with that, I offer people like, it's like 10 monthly payments while I'm building. You can pay in like 10 installments. So at the moment, I think a custom shop is currently, I think it starts at $2,350, is that right?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This is really professional, isn't it? I can't remember the price.
Yeah, 2350. Yeah.
Thanks, mate. Thanks. You got the website open?
I've got the website up, yeah.
Good man. And you know, so the people paying, you know, if they're just, you know, the basic price is really heavily loaded, you know, bare knuckles of your choice, you know, hit shop or Spurs with hardware. And if you're just going for, you know, you can get a 4A cap at that price. So if you're going for that price, you know, you're paying in 10 monthly installments, you're paying like 250 or quid or whatever, you know, a month. So, you know, it kind of works, you know.
That's very accessible for the amount of customization and the sort of things that you have on offer at that level.
Yeah.
Going straight in with the pickups and the hardware that you do, yeah, and the top options. And obviously, yeah, in sure, on your build form, you have an awful lot of stuff that you can upgrade and change, you know,
yeah,
when it comes to sort of frets, lumen lays.
Yeah, it's a bit like a candy store.
Yeah, exactly. It's
yeah,
definitely one of those things that's easy to sort of end up adding it
a
up.
Few
but
on,
there,
yeah,
there's a, you know, you, even if you keep it at the very basic level, I still think you come out with a very, very premium guitar.
So many guitars that I make that you people see on Instagram and that I absolutely love, you know, are standard, you know, standard spec. Like I had a guy called Joss Allen play for me for just over a year, and apart from he wanted a Floyd, that whole build was a standard spec build.
Right.
You know, and it wasn't because that's what, you know, that's what he chose. Simple as that. But so many builds come out that are that, because it's a great, you know, you're getting bare knuckles and you're getting, you know, really beautiful tops and woods and neckwoods and laminate neckwoods and solid, you know, good body choices. And, you know, it's a quality instrument, you know. So 100% for that price, you're getting, you know, a top custom kind of finished instrument, yeah.
When it comes to tops and things like that, is that something that you allow people to choose more or less whatever they want?
Definitely. So say if you came to me and you wanted a Clara Walnut top or whatever, I would then source X amount of Clara Walnut tops and show them to you. And hopefully you would go, oh, I like that one. I'd be like, brilliant. And I'd write your name on it. And if not, then I'd have to go and source some more. But, you know, that's essentially, you know, that's how I do it. Because I think that adds a lot, you know, you really become involved in the process. You are choosing, you know, you're choosing that. So it's rather than just going, oh, I want a maple cap. And like that happened to me. I had an experienced guitar company and I put so much effort in for it to be, you know, this, I really wanted like this, please, I emails and chatted like really nice. And it wasn't, it was a complete opposite. They just ignored it. You know, it didn't matter to them. They didn't care. Right. You know, they were that big. They didn't care. And it was a lot of money. And it, you know, I spent a lot of money that I had to work hard for, and it really, you know, left a mark. It annoyed me.
I guess
so. I was like, I'm not going
to
be like
thing
that.
To have happened. Exactly. Well, you know, because it's kind of refined you when you're on the other end of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. 100%. You know, and it's good because you get a relationship with the person you're building with, and that's a great thing. Definitely. Yeah.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, like wood tops are very much a core key thing about all of your guitars until, I guess, you come to the Tuesday,
yeah,
as I'll call it, which is your T-style guitar, which, you know, after going from like a headless, you've gone to something traditional. And again, there's a bit, a headstock reinvention on this as well.
Yeah.
You've gone for a more traditional sort of six in a row headstock, but you've given it this gorgeous like two-tone sort of layered
there's look an ebony veneer in there. Yeah, so again, that was because I wanted to open my market essentially to other players. So that's the reason I went for that model. And but it's a really tricky model. Like if you're going to it's, you know, it's arguably like, you know, one of the most classic guitars going, you know, that and a port and stuff and a Strat, you know, it's a hard thing to kind of, it's a wise decision to make, you know, a T-shaped guitar.
Sure, but it's a fine line to tread, because you've got to reinvent it enough to make it yours, but not too much to make it not a T-style.
Absolutely, yeah. Bang on the money. And that's the tricky thing. It's like, well, how am I, you know, and the thing is, you're trying to be critical to something that you love and has been part of your guitar education and growing up since, you know, you first became aware of guitars. You know, it's something that you look at and you just like, yes, that's amazing. So it's a hard thing to do. So to try to put yourself in, you know, that kind of mind as designing, you know, trying to be critical when you're looking at something like that is exceptionally hard. But obviously you want to be able to create something that is a point of difference. So, you know, wrongly or rightly, but, you know, I sort of went, well, I suppose if I was being forced to, you know, a knife point to pick things, I would maybe say that the lower horn is quite bulky. So I was like, well, I'm gonna slim that down, change shape slightly. Then I rounded off the back, kind of did an access carve, and I sort of nipped it in where it rounds over on the low E side, and then just changed the headstock slightly. But you know what it is. But you know, I pulled it up where it starts on the low E tuner. I pulled it up further so there's more sort of space for your thumb and your hand down there, and then change the shape of the nose a little bit, and then put in that veneer, and just kind of try to, you look at it and you know what you're looking at, but you also look at it and you go, there's something, what's different here? Yeah, there's differences.
I really like that what's been done with it has been subtle. Like most of your changes have been hidden. They're on sort of they're on the back, they're on the bits that you feel rather than the bits that you see, sort of thing. So
yeah, I put like a little knee carve in there, so it really sits in nice to your body. But yeah, like spent some serious time sort of thinking about that, because you're pitching towards a certain crowd. And therefore, they still need to be attracted to it. So you can't go completely off board if you're going to say it's a T-shape. Yet you need it to be different for many a reason. You know, you can't just clone other people's work. So, yeah.
And I think that the first time I saw one of these would have been at the Birmingham Guitar Show. Is it the Birmingham or the London one?
Yeah, Birmingham.
Birmingham.
Yeah, Birmingham.
Birmingham. Yeah, at the Birmingham Guitar Show. And you had this amazing, like, only just slightly pink telly, which was a fantastic color choice, because it was anything but over the top. It was subtle, but also of course, you know, until, you know, everything, I appreciate there were lots that you also had a glitter sort of slime green finish.
Orpheus.
But largely when I see your guitars, they tend to be sort of wood tops. Was the Tritti? Was the Tritti the first one that you started doing that sort of thing to, or had you done like straight color Orpheuses and things like that before? Like, when did you get into painting?
Yeah, so
was
I
that
did
always a thing.
You know, I like it all really. I had done a few Daphne Blue kind of vibe and Seafoam Green Orpheuses, and it really kind of popped to the roasted neck. Yeah,
yeah,
because you've got that kind of. You've got that modern super Strat, and then you've got this classic old school Fender color.
Very popular partnership at the moment, I'd say. Like modern guitars in, well, pastel colors are just seem to be having an absolute renaissance at the moment.
Well, rightly so. They're gorgeous, aren't they? You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, so. Yeah, I don't know. It just looked great, and it really, by them putting like a really figured neck on it, it kind of really showcased the neck, and I just think it just a good marriage.
That sort of like bird's eye roasted maple seems to be quite a common thing for you to go for when it comes to necks and boards as well.
Yeah, but bird's eye or flame depends what the customer wants. But yeah, right. I just, you know, I love working them. They smell great. they can be they can be challenging to work with at times when you're carving by hand and neck. You know, they do tend to splinter. So you have to kind of treat them well. But, you know, that once, you know, I like to keep most of my necks, unless it's a set neck. If it's a bolt-on neck, I very much like to oil and wax my neck, and it just keeps it really alive and resonant. You know, it's like how Ernie Ball does or did. I think they still oil and wax their necks. And so it just, you know, so much tone is coming from that neck. And if you're keeping the finish really thin on that, the guitar is just sings. Makes and they just difference. Look great. Yeah, they just pop. They just pop. It looks great.
Yeah. And so was the Treaty the first guitars that you were painting, or had you always offered that on the
I'd always offered that, but I think a lot of the time, because it hasn't been a situation where, you know, apart from when I launch a new model, hasn't been a situation where I make a run, because, you know, like I'm a big company, a big shop would make a run. You know, you're dictated by what the customer orders, and because if you started with a Flame Maple Cap, people go, oh, I love Flame Maple Caps, I have one of them, and you kind of get in this cycle of making that because people see it, people like it, people want it.
Yeah.
So the only reason the colors came about was because I think I was planning to do when the London Guitar Show rebooted in, was it 18?
Yeah, around that.
Yeah, and I was going to that, and I'd done a load of, I did a Daphne Blue and a Seafoam Green Orpheus. And then because people see it, people start ordering it, and they become, you know, you start making them as well. So I think that's the main thing. I've always offered it, but it sort of still goes back to the same thing with me. People have to see them to go, oh yeah, that's a great option.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I definitely see on the order sheets, you know, runs of sort of patterns where the people have seen on Instagram or something a certain type of guitar and have been influenced by that, and then I get a run of that kind of similar kind of vein instrument, and then something else comes out, and then I get a run of that, you know. It's very much kind of that kind of seems to be the pattern for me anyway, of how it kind of works. I think, and then when you get obviously to so many instruments out there and people can go back and look at everything, that it's becoming a lot more varied now. There's definitely a lot more variation, which is good because it becomes very, you know, becomes a lot more interesting.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's getting to, you know, when you're getting such completely unique requests from people each time, oh, that must brilliant. Make this whole thing absolutely
brilliant. it's you know, it's great job satisfaction, you know, especially when people bond with the guitar and they love it and they tell you they love it, you know, that is just wonderful. I haven't ever experienced any greater, you know, job satisfaction. You know, you've been, you know, working since you're like 17 or 18. I have not experienced that job satisfaction. Just people are like, this is great. And I always sort of go out and I want to create an instrument that inspires someone, the player, to create their best stuff. Even if they're just a guy in his bedroom to, you know, an artist of some description, I want the instrument to inspire them. You know, they play it and they bond with it, and it allows them to create something great. You know, it puts in, you know, we've all had that guitar where we pick it up and it just works, and it works for us, and we just play it, and we just like, oh, I'm just playing great stuff on this guitar. And that's kind of like my goal. You know, that's where I sort of aim to try to hit.
That's a lovely sentiment to have, I think.
Yeah, well, I think if you do that and you're bonding with the people, then I think it's only going to be successful. I think if people are bonding with the guitars that much, they're going to speak fondly of them, and therefore you're going to attract more custom, and therefore you can make a living doing it, which is, you know, obviously a goal.
Yeah.
You know, but you don't, you know, you want to be able to find that goal by, rather than being like, give me the money now. You can be a little bit more, you know, get it, you know, a little bit, you know, a better way of getting there, you know, and just, you know, make sure people have, you know, that connection with you and the instrument that you're building for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, a great sentiment. But I'd love to talk about the Road Crew Orpheus as well, because this is quite remarkable. Like we've already been talking about the fact that, you know, really when you think that these custom built guitars are starting at £2,350, that's, you know, that's not a lot in comparison to the sort of guitars that are offering the sort of tops, finishes, looks, and it's just, you know, incredible
playability.
Playability as well. Yeah, get that in there as well. But with, you know, it's such a reasonable price to start your custom shop at. And now you've gone and introduced the Road Crew Orpheus, which is essentially almost an off-the-peg guitar for £1,500.
So I think we were talking earlier that I started off with like these big discounts. And then when every time the discount ended around Christmas time, I was like throwing out there like 1 week left, 2 weeks left, because I felt guilty about increasing the price from like 30% to 20%, et cetera. And I was like, oh, you know, someone's going to come to me in January, like, oh, but it was cheaper then, and it's going to be awkward, then I'm going to give it to them cheaper, and then it's, you know, which is not good business practice. Bear in mind, I came at this with a business mind on, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But I think that's the human side of me, you know, a bit affecting things too much. And so when I removed all the discount, I was like, oh, you know, am I getting rid of, you know, scaring away such, you know, a portion of my clientele? Am I going to lose? Am I going to see a drop of trade? Which was obviously worrying. And obviously, you can get absolutely brilliant guitars for, you know, around that £1,500-£1,200 mark that tend to be made, obviously, you know, in Far East and stuff. But they're phenomenal instruments made by great companies. And you know, they do really well. And I was like, well, I'm not in that market, you know, but do I want to be in that market? Well, yeah, there's players in that market that would be great to be at. So by simplifying, by doing essentially runs, and I clearly, you know, got inspired by, you know, Perry Ormsby, the way he does his guitar runs like that.
Well, I think this is a fantastic business model, and I'm sure that, you know, you're going to have every success doing runs. I think it's a great way for small companies to,
yeah, you know, to work. Hopefully, yeah. Like, but by doing that, by sort of saying, okay, they're all going to be a one-piece, one-patch body. They're going to be open pore black. You know, they're all hardtail. They're all quartz or roasted necks. You know, this is kind of what it is. You know, I'm not having to look at build sheets and go, what did this guy want again? Did he want, oh, yeah, he wants this. Oh, I've got to do that. Oh, he doesn't want this. Oh, he doesn't want, you know, I can kind of, I can streamline the labor time so quickly.
Yeah, of course. That I don't have to throw. You've thrown a couple of upgrades in there as well, though.
Yeah, so you can choose your neck carve, because I think that's vital to have a guitar that's right for you. And you can choose which boot camp bare knuckles you use. Again, so you've got a different kind of player, wants a different kind of sound, and then you can do regular, like straight down the board dots or an offset dot, because it doesn't take any extra time to do that. You know, that's no hardship, but then it gives people a little bit of customization. You know, but yeah, pretty simple. And then like this one is black open pore. You know, maybe the next one will be mahogany. Maybe it will have a Floyd. Maybe it will have a hip shop trend. Maybe it'll be a Tritty model. Do you know what I mean? Like maybe a headless model. So I can mix it up, you know, different ways, keeping the same sort of vibe the way we're doing it. But you know, Tritty is definitely going to be one of the next ones. Run two or three will definitely be, you know, sort of that stripped down.
That seems to be sort of to make sense, I guess, as the first two. Like, absolutely, the Orpheus is the first one. Making a dead, simple super strat that still has kind of all the customizations that are going to make an instrument unique, but you've picked you know, having this open pore black, it's still a unique finish. It still very much looks like a custom shop, but by not offering the options, you're able to do that for £1,500. You do the same thing with the Tritty as well, and I think you bank the whole other part of, you know, if that's how sort of the guitar audience splits into modern and traditional, I think you kind of bank both those audiences with a, you know, with an incredibly affordable model for
hopefully
the amount of guitar you're getting for that.
Yeah, and they're like, every neck is like a dual truss rod with two carbon fiber sport rods, because I call it the Road Crew, as like a little tip of the head to Motorhead and Lemmy. You know, we are the Road Crew. And it's a guitar that, because the custom shots, sometimes they look so pretty, you know, sometimes, oh, do I want to gig that? Do I want to gig that? You know,
I'm a big fan of a working guitar.
And that's the plan. It's meant to be a workhorse.
Yeah.
A tone workhorse. Everything about it is tone, playability, and workhorse that you can absolutely. You've got this brilliant crafted handmade instrument that you can gig, you know, and that's the point. It's set up to be stable, giggable, and just, you know, just a great sounding instrument. And you know, and hopefully, and again, you know, obviously the only difference of it is, you know, you're not getting in payments. It's kind of like put £500 down and then a couple of months later, you know, I sort of launch it early, like £500, and then it will be ready here where you pay the remaining, you know, right. Sort of like 6 to 8 weeks later, they'll all be done. Pay your final £1,000.
And you're only going to do limited slots for this, of course, as well.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously, I can only make so many. At the moment, it's just me. I can only make so many guitars. So if I, you know, if I take on tons of them, then the custom guys are getting knocked back and knocked back and knocked back. So I can't in good faith do that to them. So, you know, I sort of like, when I quote my times, I know when I'm going to be doing the road crew. And so I sort of block off that month. That's road crew month.
Right.
And so I can make as many road crews as I can in that time period. So that's kind of it really. You know, I've kind of got like, well, hopefully I'll get good enough that I'll be able to make them in batches of this amount. You know, I'm going to do it twice a year. I'm going to do one in the summer, one in the winter. And so, you know, start off with probably just small numbers and then hopefully build up to the maximum I can do. But yeah, that should be cool.
That is going to be very exciting. I can't wait to see the road crew kind of out and about. I think that's a £1,500 custom shop. Yeah, that's a fantastic thing to have made.
Thanks very much.
I guess what's you know, are you expanding the range any further? Are you adding any new models? Is there something new that you're launching around the corner?
I'm so excited about it. It's got, should I tell you the project name? I couldn't think of the project name because obviously I've got these names that I've like, oh, what am I going to call it? So I've called it the project name Dad Rock. Yeah. Okay. Well, take from that what you will. Do not judge. I am a dad myself and I like to rock. But yeah, so I've got, it's, I'm not going to launch it like a customer shop. I'm going to launch it like a proper company does. And I'm going to do, it's going to come with a carved top or a flat top. It's not what you're thinking, firstly. That needs to be said. It's not what you're thinking. Right. It's completely an original design, obviously influenced by old designs, but it's not like a single cut or anything like that. And it's going to come with a carved top or a flat top, a semi-hollow, why can't I think of the name of the trim? Help me out. Like a
Bigsby?
Not Bigsby. Yeah. Like a Jag trim.
Right. Okay. Oh, very nice. Like a mastery trim.
Like a mastery trim. Thank you. That's the word. The one for James at the Home of Tone has just brought in a variant of that. And I think we'll probably use those ones.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, it's going to come with, you know, this flavor of different sort of specs, you know, from flat top, carved top, you know, hardtail, you know, wraparound, you know, modern one with a hip shot as I use now, you know, a full, and I'm going to launch it with, you know, six variants because I've learned, as we've previously been discussing, you kind of get orders from what you show. So if I just launched a flat top, you know, that's only going to appreciate certain people. And they're only, even though on the build form, I'll have all these options, I will never sell them. So launch it with these six models, six different styles. This is how they can come. Bosh. And hopefully, that will be good. That will be, attacking another segment of the market.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds like a fantastic idea. That's I love that it's going to have so much variant within one model.
Yeah. I'm super pumped about it. I cannot wait to finish the wonderful customer's guitars that I've currently doing. To start, you know, in the background making them, because it's also going to, I can't really leak pictures of it because I want it to be a bit of a like a bang, there it is, you know, so it, one day it won't be there and the next day it will be.
Is there a scheduled time? Did you say that? I can't remember if you said
Said it yet. It was meant to have already happened, but obviously the world went upside down.
Yes, the world has ended.
Oh, look, there's a zombie house. Oh, no, it's not. We're okay. So, you know, it's this year, this late summer. Okay. It should be here.
Wow, that is extraordinarily exciting. I can't wait.
Yeah.
What a fantastic thing to follow the concept of the road crew as well. Just to introduce something that's almost the opposite with an absolute bucket load of options.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's going to be a real, like, hopefully a real head turner.
Very
That's
cool.
That's the plan. That's the plan. Well,
that sounds fantastic, and I will look forward to it loads.
Awesome.
But that's about all the time we have for this week's episode of the Friday Special. So it has been absolutely wonderful having you on, Stuart. Thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat with me.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm pleased that my first podcast was with you.
Ah, there you go. Well, I am pleased to have been your first podcast, as it were. But yes, you can check out Stuart's incredible guitars if you're not already listening at smpguitars.co.uk. And you know, go and look at all the incredible things that he's built on Instagram with at smpguitars. And you can, of course, catch more Guitar Nerds over on Patreon at patreon.com/guitar nerds, or you can join us on any of the major social platforms with @guitar nerds. And we'll be back next week with our regular episode on Wednesday and another Friday special on Friday. We'll catch you then for more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.